Hey, this is Vinny from Less Than Jake, and you're listening to Rocket Fuel.
What's up and welcome to Rocket Fuel, where we play punk, ska, indie, and everything else in between. My name is Jeff, and I'll be your host. Coming up on this episode of the show, we are chock full of new music from Westbound Train, North Lincoln, My Career Is Tumbledown, and many more. I'll review the debut EP Steel to Dust from the Oregon band Anchordown, and later, I'll talk with Less Than Jake drummer and lyricist Vinny Fiorello. But up first is new music from North Lincoln. The boys from Grand Rapids, Michigan are finally back with a new record. It's called Midwestern Blood, and here is a track from it. This is Bridge Jumpers.
Yeah. Oh!
Welcome back to Rocket Fuel. That was the Durham, North Carolina band Red Collar with Rust Belt Heart, which appears on their self-released full-length debut, Pilgrim. This record has been on constant rotation in my iPod since I first heard about it from my friend Brian over at WhatWeHate.com. It is definitely one of my favorites thus far in 09. Before that, you heard the song Winter Wasteland from Make Do and Mend. That comes from their second EP called Bodies of Water. And now, punk rock headlines. Lucero has announced the completion of their first full-length for Universal Republic. The band posted this update. Lucero is very pleased to announce that the new album is finished. Details to come very soon. In the meantime, we're making plans to do one video for each song on the album, and we're interested in hearing from you if you've got the skills and interest to make one. Our record label will be able to use all of them for promotional purposes. In short, you'll get a lot of press and credit for them, but just a little bit of money. Hey, that seems to be the way of the record business these days. The record is the follow-up to Rebels, Rogues, and Sworn Brothers from 2006. In the intervening years, frontman Ben Nichols released a solo EP. The EP is based around the novel Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy. Tallahassee Floridians Look Mexico have signed to Suburban Home Records. The label had this to say. Today, I am excited to announce to the world that we have just signed Look Mexico. The band are currently recording what will be their Suburban Home Records debut. They will again be working with Phil Martin and August Hansen. The band has posted two demos from the follow-up to Gasp Asp and This Is Animal Music. You can find those demos on their MySpace page. And finally, according to a Twitter update, Crime and Stereo have entered the studio with producer Mike Sapone to begin work on their as-yet-untitled fourth full-length. The band is aiming for a fall 2009 release. The record will be their first since Is Dead. In 2008, the band released the B-sides rarities compilation Selective Wreckage. Punk rock headlines are brought to you by the Spino-clad gents at punknews.org. There's fast food, then there's punknews.org. Up next is more new music, and this time it's from the San Jose, California pop-punk band The Pillow Fights. The band recently released the 10-song, 11-minute disc Round 1 on Silver Sprocket. Here's the opener from it. This is Buzz Buzz.
I'm too busy to keep on leaning, too difficult to hold me, but I know if I try, I can get it right this time. You're too lonely to be busy, and if you just admit you miss me, we could give this a try. Maybe get it right this time. I don't wanna talk about it. Why can't we just get around and drop the
more than just luck. Cause as fate would have it, I had a dream the other night. The two of us beneath this exploding sky.
And we're back here at Rocket Fuel. That was a track from another disc that is an early favorite for my top 25 albums of 2009. That was The Evening Rig with the Hilltop Pines, which comes from their Heart of Champions release, Is Doin' Stuff. Prior to that, you heard the dynamic, soul-filled ska band Westbound Train with Ain't Gonna Be Easy, which is from their new album, Come and Get It, out now on Hellcat Records. Be sure to check out the band as they travel around North America as part of this summer's Warped Tour. You may not have noticed before, but I've never reviewed an EP here on Rocket Fuel. That all comes to an end today, as I will share my thoughts with you about the debut EP Steel to Dust from Portland, Oregon's Anchor Down. This 6-song, 20-minute EP starts off with Bromancing the Stones, which would make you think that these boys are from the East Bay and would have opened for the likes of Rancid and Green Day. The band then shows a grittier, edgier sound with L Radio. This anthem, filled with plenty of fist-pumping beats, show how diverse their sound can be, all while being cohesive and impressive. There is not one bad or filler tune on this release, which, quite frankly, no EP should ever have. Another song that is a standout on Steel to Dust is the closer, World War I. This tune, which is essentially the band's mission statement put to song, is the perfect choice to bring the release to an end. With lyrics like, "We're gonna rage a war on everything we've ever known, these words are our bullets, these chords are our swords," and others throughout the song, you know that Anchor Down is in this fight to stay, and they're not giving in. As I listen to Steel to Dust, I find myself looking back to the time when I first started listening to punk rock back in the mid-90s. I feel like this would be a band that I would have heard on MTV's 120 Minutes and been stoked to ride my bike to the record store to pick up their release. This nostalgic feeling makes me even happier that I'm hearing these tunes today. That means the punk rock that shaped me is still alive and going strong with bands like Anchor Down. On the Rocket Fuel gauge for releases, a 0 being that the EP is out of gas, a 5 being that the tank is half full or average, and a 10 being that the EP is full of gas and ready to blast off, I give Steel to Dust by Anchor Down an 8. This release does exactly what an EP is supposed to do, which is make the listener eagerly anticipate the upcoming full length. I, for one, can't wait to get my ears on more tunes from these guys. Is there an album that you'd like for me to review on the show? Or maybe there's a tune that you would like to hear Rocket Fuel style? If so, be sure to hit me up at rocketfuelpodcast@gmail.com. You can also visit my MySpace page at myspace.com/rocketfuelpodcast or follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/rocket_fuel. From Steel to Dust, here is Anchor Down with L Radio. We'll be right back.
sky. The streets won't sleep tonight. A lullaby for the half alive. The city swings and whines to the double crime of drugs and hard times. Lion City sirens sing the night away, night away. Lion City sirens sing the night away. The city feels like a cage.
Welcome back to Rocket Fuel. That was the legendary Gainesville, Florida ska punk band Less Than Jake with Does the Lion City Still Roar, which is from their latest release, GNV FLA. Before that was another band hailing from the Sunshine State. From their paper and plastic debut, The Chronicle, that was Protagonist with Charge the Chronicle. Speaking of Less Than Jake and paper and plastic, last week I had a chance to talk with the one and only Vinny Fiorello. We talked about everything from Less Than Jake's latest record, to his new children's book, Sometimes Robots Just Like Being Robots, to Peanuts and the Warped Tour. Check it out. I'm here with Vinny from Less Than Jake. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much for having me.
Glad to do it. Now, you guys just got back a little while ago from South America. How were the shows down there?
Oh, man. The shows down there were great, and Brazil was fabulous. We played Argentina, we played Chile, and we played Colombia. I mean, all of them were great, I'll be honest with you. I think that even though I came back completely sick from that trip, I think more so it was just because I was traveling 3 months prior to that, but after that trip I came back just completely sick. It took me like 2 weeks just to get over it, but the shows were completely worth it going down there. I had a complete blast.
That's awesome. Now, is there a different vibe down there? Like, are the kids in the scene different, or different reaction to you guys? How is it like down there?
I mean, it's similar to the Old West in the way that, like, there's just no rules, you know? It's that, you know, kids are up on stage, kids are jumping off the balcony into the crowd. It's just, you know, there's a lot more, like, sort of energy and craziness. It's not like in the United States where, you know, if you go see a band play at a club, you know, it's, yeah, there's people dancing and there's a certain energy about it, but it's not where, you know, there's 13 people on stage at one time, you know? There's
right.
not, you know, kids hanging from, you know, the second floor, jumping into the crowd. There's not kids jumping off the, like, the railings into, you know, off the balcony into the crowd. It's pretty insane. And, you know, it's cool. We have a lot of footage from it, actually. And I think on our MySpace, there's a, like, sort of a quick trip synopsis, and you can see a lot of that going on.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, folks will definitely have to check that out, see what the crowds are like down in South America. That's awesome. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about your latest release, GNVFLA. You guys kind of took a different tact here and decided to put that record out yourselves via your own Sleep It Off label. What led to that decision, and were any of the guys in the band reluctant to do that at first?
I mean, I think that it took a little bit of convincing for some guys in the band, you know, but ultimately I think that everyone knew it was the right decision. I mean, we've spent so much time on so many different labels
right. In
the band's history, and I think that's what we've always wanted to do. When we first started, we wanted to release a lot of records on a lot of different labels, and I think that just releasing after two major labels, you know, and a slew of indies, I think that releasing our own record is just sort of the logical progression in how the music industry is right now.
Right.
You know, without getting too heavy-handed about it, I think that, you know, sooner or later, as everything starts to kind of shrink into genres and subgenres, and there's really no reason to be on a major label unless you need the money to go record or go market. In
Less
Than Jake's case, we, you know, tour, so we have an income coming in that we can use for marketing our own record and ask for distribution because of, you know, there's a lot of digital distribution going on, and there's a lot of people right now that, you know, whether it be R.E.D. or Red Eye, they're looking for, you know, opportunities that are outside of what major labels are giving them as far as physical distribution, you know.
Right.
And again, without getting too overboard, I think that the brick and mortar stores, you know, like Best Buy, you know, and then go into Tower and Circuit City, you'll see, you know, we've seen some of those close already.
Right.
But Best Buy right now, you know, that's shrinking by the year, you know, its availability for music, and they look to, you know, games, and they look to DVDs. So I think that for, you know, Less Than Jake, as things start to shrink in brick and mortar stores and expand digitally, just made sense for us to cut a distribution deal, and we did that worldwide in different, you know, with different companies,
right. And
just put the record out. I mean, with the experience that I had from Field by Ram in marketing and sort of the process and the system of putting out records, it was a pretty sort of simple and you know, seamless thing to do.
Right. You had mentioned, you know, talking about major labels and things like that, talking about, you know, the financial backing and the recording process and so forth, kind of stepping out on your own like that, thinking financially, did that kind of change your approach to the recording process of the new record?
Well, yeah, I mean, if, you know, when you sign to a major label, there's two mentalities. One mentality would be, you're signing to a major, you can do everything that you used to do on an indie in hopes that you were going to recoup those costs and make your money back from a major label. But anyone that's been on a major label knows that those recouped costs never really happen because major labels spend money, a lot of money. So I think that for when Less Than Jake was on, let's say, Warner Brothers, we just were like, we want to work with a dream producer, Rob DiMaio. He costs X amount of money. Let's go, you know, let's see what that's all about. Let's go record in New Orleans. And you know, you throw down a bunch of things. Let's rent, you know, guitars, and let's do these things, because you already knew that you were never going to recoup that money back for those recording costs and marketing costs. So you just sort of threw caution to the wind and said, fuck it, you know?
Definitely. Later this summer, you guys are going to be hitting the road as a part of the Warped Tour. It's like the fifth or sixth time, believe it or not, that you guys have been on it. You know, over the years, people in punk rock have been critical of the tour and the corporate sponsorships and all of that. What has kept you guys coming back to the tour, and what do you say to those folks that are kind of out there hating on the Warped Tour?
Well, you know, I think I'll correct you real quick. That this is our 11th time.
Oh my gosh!
Part of the Warped Tour.
Oh wow! Okay.
So, what you said coming back, I think that it just, you play in front of a new crowd. I mean, that's for us. It's a half hour a day playing with bands, some bands that I like. It, you know, and this case, NoFX and Bad Religion. I mean, that to me is worth just seeing every day. And we promised ourselves 2 years ago, we were like, we're not playing the Warped Tour unless, you know, NoFX come back and play it. And when we found out that NoFX was playing this summer on Warped, we were like, okay, it's time for us to go back and go play. And I think that, for the most part, I'll be honest with you, it's, you know, it's a good hangout for the summer on tour, you know?
Sure.
It's outside, it's in front of new people, it's with bands I like, so I mean, that's enough. And as far as the haters go, I mean, to go see us, you know, Streetlight Manifesto, Big D, NoFX, Flogging Molly, you know, Bad Religion, I mean, for the price that people would pay to go see that on Warped Tour versus the price that they would just go see two of those bands together,
right.
I mean, the Warped Tour is so much more reasonable to go see just a lot of music and have a day to go see a lot of punk rock. And I think this year it's a better lineup than it had been, let's say, last year, which was more teen pop, sort of with a teen pop slant to it.
Right.
You know, and then a few years ago, it was where it was all screamo and all sort of like new metal slant to it. So I think that this year, there's just a lot of good punk rock. There's a lot of ska this year and ska punk. So, I'm excited to be on it this year, to be honest with you. A lot of friends of mine are playing, and I'm excited to see them all summer long.
Awesome. Awesome. A project of yours that's been taking up a lot of your time lately has been your new Paper and Plastic label. Did you kind of start this label because you kind of had that itch again to start, you know, discovering bands and helping them put out their music, kind of like you did, you know, back in the Fueled by Ramen days?
Absolutely. I mean, I was doing a few other things prior to starting Paper and Plastic, and it came to a point where I had just kind of decided that, you know, in the wake of this, like, sort of void of no one putting out punk rock, I mean, you have Epitaph now, who's sort of signing older, more established bands that are sort of in the punk rock genre, but they also sign, you know, a lot of teen pop and a lot of, you know, a lot of different genres of music. You know, Fat Records is probably, you know, the only one who still was releasing melodic punk rock, and I think that when I started Paper and Plastic, I just wanted to have a label that, you know, was filling the void. You know, you have, let's say, No Idea in town. Var puts out a lot of music as well, but I just wanted, there's a lot of things that Var wouldn't put out, let's say, that wouldn't fit into what No Idea is, and there's a lot of things that Fat wouldn't put out as well. So I wanted to start a label that was sort of in the middle of those two genre-wise,
right.
You know? And I think that a lot of times melodic punk rock, it seems, you know, people think it's out of style, but shit, I mean, melodic punk rock and melodic hardcore, that's what is my first love musically. That's what I grew up on, and that's what I continue to love, you know? I mean, give me a Screeching Weasel record, a Descendants record. I mean, those are the things that, and, you know, music that I love, the type of music that I love. So with, you know, Gator Faith and Protagonist, Shook Ones, I mean, I think that I'm filling that void that I set out for myself. I mean, you know, filling that up the void that I set out for myself early on when I decided to start the label.
Now, thinking of that, you mentioned, you know, a few of the bands on the label. It seems like, gosh, lately, it seems like almost every week or 10 days I'm reading about Paper and Plastic kind of bringing somebody in to the family, whether it's, you know, Cheap Girls, Blacklist Royals, Assassinate the Scientist, We Are the Union, and so forth, all of which, by the way, are excellent bands that I enjoy. What kind of criteria do you use when you decide to bring a band into Paper and Plastic?
I mean, I think that it's just music that I dig, you know. That's the only thing that I can really say. I mean, when I listen to Blacklist Royals, that's a band that I listened to prior to working with them.
Right.
But I listened to anyway that I really like their songs and I really like the band and I like them as people. The same thing as We Are the Union, you know, and go down with Shook Ones. And I think the criteria is that I just like the music, and that's the way it should be, man. If you're releasing records and you're putting your time and your energy into releasing a band's record, you should love the fucking records that you're putting out. I mean, that's fucking totally obvious, you
right.
know?
Right.
And that's the difference to me between, you know, an independent record label and a major label, where a major label is there for, you know, it's the music business. They're there to make money, you know? Right. They see, you know, a band and they can go, oh, we can monetize this band, you know? And there's come a point where that has to be, you have to start thinking like that, I guess. But
right.
with Thicker Than Plastic, right now, I'm not thinking like that. I'm thinking what I want to release, what I like, some of my favorite bands, and that's what I'm going to do. I mean, it's funny because there's a lot of, I've been releasing a lot more young and young and not very established bands, but coming up in the next 2 months, it's going to be a lot of releases from established bands, just kind of collectible things and EPs and just records that I think are fucking pretty cool. I mean, coming up, just to give you like just a sampling of it, the
right.
next record that we have coming out is the Shook Ones record, which the Shook Ones new record is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
After that is a Westbound Train 7-inch.
Okay.
After that is the Cheap Girls Find Me a Drink Home repress of their first record. After that is Frank Turner double LP. After that is a Flatliner Ceremonial Snips 7-inch, split 7-inch.
That's a lot of awesome stuff coming out, like you said, you know, from established artists and bands and man, that's you got a lot of good things coming up. That's pretty awesome, and we'll all be keeping our eyes and ears out for those releases as they come out. In addition to being, you know, drummer, lyricist, toy designer, record company owner, you're now able to also add author to the list of your accomplishments. You're about to put out a children's book. How did you enter into the foray of children's books, and what was that experience like?
Well, you know, I think for me, I was just looking for something to do that was a little bit different than writing lyrics and things like that, but still maintaining what I know, which is sort of a rhyme, you know, rhyme, whether it be like soft rhyme or whether it be, you know, a little bit more complicated rhyme. I think that I just wanted to do something that was fun and wasn't too heavy, and I started to do, you know, just little small stories. And that led me into doing Sometimes Robots Like Being Robots, which is started pre-selling yesterday on Friday, but
excellent.
Will come out 2 weeks from now officially. But it just started to build up, you know, little stories. And one of the things, I collect old 50s robots, and I have a collection of them in my office. So literally, like, it just started to grow out of what I like and when I collect anyway, and as it started to build up, a friend of mine who's a good illustrator, I talked to him and approached him about illustrating some of the stories. So the book is actually 13 small stories that are encapsulated into the book that's coming out.
Excellent.
And I think, you know what, it was one of those things where it felt like a natural progression and just cool to do. You know, and it was funny when I read on the Punk News, actually, you know, and Zach got, you know, there's an article on that, and people kind of, like, gave me a bunch of bullshit about it, but you know what? For me, it just happened naturally, and it was a cool thing for me to do, and I still, like, feel good about it, regardless of whether there's a skull on the back of, you know, a children's book, or whether, you know, they think some of the content's age-appropriate or not. And that's cool for everyone to have their opinion on it. But I still feel, you know, like, completely and utterly stoked on doing it.
Definitely. Now, thinking about that, I have to ask only because I'm actually a new parent myself. Is there kind of an age range that you think is appropriate?
Yeah,
for
you know, it's definitely, you know, the 8 to 10 category.
Okay.
It's not for little kids, but it's for kids who understand. You know, if they're watching, you know, South Park, and they're watching, you know, even like older cartoons, then any kind of content that's in that book is age appropriate for that.
Right. And that's good to know. Very good. You know, thinking about, you know, the children's books and cartoons, I'm actually about 6 chapters in or so on a book that I think you've read as well, and that's called Schultz and Peanuts, which is a biography of course, the famed Peanuts cartoonist. I think I had read somewhere before that you felt like you and Charles Schultz are kindred spirits, and I was curious to know how so.
You know, I think that if you read that book, then you'll sort of understand that with Charles Schultz, he went through, like, sort of, as he was writing, it was more sort of like, I wouldn't call it a sort of conflicted about writing some of the things that he was doing or being in business with some of the people that he was in business with, you
right.
know?
Right.
But I think that for me, when I was reading that and he was sort of, you know, telling stories about how he felt when he was working with, you know, some corporations and how it sort of laid out and how some of the content that he was being asked to do versus what he really wanted to do. I mean, I felt a strong sort of bond to that because it was similar with Less Than Jake. I mean, there was a time when, you know, with Warner Brothers where they were asking us to do a lot of things and I felt, you know, extremely conflicted about what to do about that, you know, and towards the end of our deal with Warner Brothers, it came to the point where it was like, you're doing this or we're shelving your record. So you're sort of forced at a point
right.
to do some of the things that you really don't want to do, but you have to do because you want your record out and you want to continue to tour, you want to continue to, you know, be able to, you know, pay for your mortgage and your car payment and things like that because that's what we do for a job. We play music, you
right.
know, despite, you know, having a love for it and despite a lot of things, that's still what I do to go and pay bills out there. So I think that when I read that Charles Schultz book, it really hit a lot of things hit home, as well as I think that for me, you know, I think writing sort of exercises a certain amount of demons that I have about drugs and about alcohol and about past violence. So I think that, and the same thing, if you read the book, the same thing went for him. He used, you know, writing and that, you know, of what he did to sort of exercise sort of the dark cloud that he felt was over his head. So
right.
most definitely, I feel, after reading that book, I feel like he was a kindred spirit for sure, not in the way of talent at all, because I think that Charles Schultz is talented beyond belief and I would never be able to touch that sort of that talent and that sort of legacy,
right.
but more so in how he felt about doing the things he was doing and the experiences that he had while doing them. That's what I was sort of what you're referring to.
Right. And something I thought was what I've enjoyed, and again, I haven't finished the book yet, but what I think is cool about that book is that, you know, and I think I'm in the area where he's like in high school still. So, but it's cool that they talk about something from his childhood and then they actually show you a Peanuts cartoon that is like right in lockstep with what he was experiencing, you know, in his childhood, which I think, is pretty neat. You know, it's kind of like a snapshot of right then, you know, like when he was, you know, visiting his crazy relative's house and the stuff that would go on there or, you know, whatever would happen. Is there kind of a similar concept for you where you can, you know, you can kind of look back and say, you know, a specific lyric or song is about a specific moment in your life that has ended, that's over now?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's what all the lyrics are about. I mean, there's, you know, if you go, let's say, with just friends, you know, let's go, Jen doesn't like me anymore. That's, you know, literally talking about a girl that had a crush on Chris, but, you know, it got to the point where she started being stalkery, and, like, the stories that she used to tell us about, you know, her dad, like, you know, when people were over visiting her and they would go to the bathroom, he would, like, kick open the door, then, you know, take a Polaroid picture of them using the bathroom, and he would have this, like, crazy, like, gallery of people going to the bathroom as, like, a joke, you know? Not in a curvy way, but, like, as a joke, but, like, that's about, you know, Jen doesn't like me more. That's about a certain, you know, person that's in the past history. That same thing goes for, you know, you go down the line, you know, with the lyrics. They're about people that I know, or they're about myself. So let's say with Al's War, right?
Right.
Al's War, when you're reading it, you would think that it's about somebody else, but really Al's War is about me, and Al is short for alcoholic.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So if you go, you know, if you read through that, that's really referring back to certain times and places and of who I was, you know. And so I refer to it back, you know, myself instead of a third person.
Right.
You know, you do it that way. So, I mean, I think that, yeah, to answer your question, if you read through Les and Jake lyrics, it's all about friends I know and family and myself in certain specific situations that go on. I mean, that's what I do to exercise how I feel inside and certain things. You know, it's like I came from, not to be too heavy, but my dad was an alcoholic. His dad before him was an alcoholic. I was well on my way of, you know, being an alcoholic, you know, did a lot of drugs at certain points, and I think that writing helped me sort of exercise that out.
Right. Well, that's very, I'm glad to hear that those were definitely exercised out, that's for sure. You know, thinking about some of that subject matter and some of the heavy stuff that, you know, you've put into song and into lyrics, are there any Les and Jake songs that you kind of avoid playing live or anything like that because of you know, just the how they impact you?
You know what? I feel good. You know, every once in a while, it sort of hits me where I'm while we're playing a song, and I kind of think back to a certain time, and it kind of hits me in a weird way. But we write those songs for a reason, and we sort of, I put, you know, pen to paper for a reason, so I don't really like to kind of go, like, I don't want to play that song because it bums me out.
Right.
I'd much rather play the song because it makes me, like, sort of remember certain things to keep me on track, and, right. And I'm cool with doing that.
That's awesome. I'm going to switch gears here a little bit, kind of lighten it up. After you guys put out the B is for B-Sides album, did Jay Frenzel ever pay you back the $500?
He did pass the $500 the day after he ruined the bus. So.
Oh, okay, awesome. Well, that's good. I've always been wondering that since B is for B-Sides came out. So,
you know, it's funny because, you know, I just recently told a story about Frenzel Rom that night that happened. You know, they showed up in Denver midsummer, so it was midwinter for them.
Oh, right.
And they get their, you know, in this, like, crazy elevation. They land in the middle of summertime from, you know, from coming from their winter. But as soon as they get to where Warp is, we're waiting there. And, you know, and all of a sudden, like, later that night, like, we're partying really hard. And so Jay just, like, nonchalantly and casually picks up a 2x4 and then slams it into the side of our bus and then, like, kind of, like, puts it, like, props it against the bus and then jumps on it to try to break it, and then, like, you know, the bus is totally fucked. So, yeah, I mean, after that point, he woke up the next morning, as we all did, with completely just, you know, feeling like complete horseshit, and he was like, I totally fucked up your bus, and we're like, yeah, our bus driver's freaking out, and he was like, well, let me know how much it is, and we'll take care of it. But it just got to the point where it was just like, we're just partying too, it was just partying too hard, and it got to that point.
Right. Thinking of the B-Sides record, which is definitely a fan favorite for a lot of folks that I talk to that are Les and Jake fans, everyone loves B is for B-Sides, which is pretty awesome. Are there any recordings from the GNVFLA sessions that might see the light of day?
There's a few things, but nothing that we recorded that that would come out. We have a few songs that, you know, were written that we never recorded. I don't even know if that we'll ever kind of record them and have them ever see, you know, the light of day, as you put it.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I think that with GMVFLA, we wrote a record that was specific to the moment and to the town that we live in.
Right.
And I think that trying to put anything into it, you know, after the fact would be weird. I think that the songs all sort of are there for a reason. So as we were writing it, if it didn't fit, it just kind of got put to the side and not kind of revisited again.
Gotcha. Just a couple of questions left here. Of course, you guys have been around as a band for something like 17 years or something like that. Obviously, as you've talked about earlier, a lot of ups and downs through the band. What is Less Than Jake's secret for keeping everything fun and for staying together as a band?
Dude, I mean, we're my best friends, you know? Those are the guys that are my best friends. Those are the guys that are closer to me than my family.
Right.
I spend more time with them than my family, you know? And I think that it's just that chemistry that we've had while just hanging out and playing live and the fun that we, like, just have playing music together, that's what keeps it going. I mean, never in the ups and downs through major labels, through independent labels, through losing members, through, like, just, you know, the most extreme highs and the most extreme lows. The one thing that I always know of is that I can rely on the other guys in the band. They're my family, they're my friends, and I think that when we get together, the only thing we really worry about is playing music and having fun. So I think that when we go up on stage, we're aiming to go have a good time and have it be fun and have it, you know, be entertaining. And then, you know, we leave sort of the heavier stuff to the studio. So we kind of play it, you know, where there's a studio Less Than Jake, where it's a little bit more serious and, you know, it's a little bit sort of darker tinged. And then you have Less Than Jake live, and we like to keep it, you know, fun, and we like to keep it entertaining and just go out there and have a really good time.
Right. Well, just as kind of a side note, Less Than Jake is, in my opinion, one of the best live acts that I've ever seen. I've seen you guys a kabillion times. I'm, you know, been in Florida for 10 some odd years, and, you know, I've seen you guys a bunch of times all over the state, and shooting toilet paper through with a leaf blower onto the stage to the Skull Guy and all that stuff. I've always thought you guys are one of the best live bands out there. So that translates out into the audience for sure. That's for sure.
Okay.
Last question. Could you ever, in your wildest dreams, have imagined that this little, you know, punk ska band that you started in Gainesville would have grown to be the band that it is and opened as many doors as it has for you?
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, and I'm thankful every day for that. I think that, you know, when we first started, we never thought it was going to go beyond just, you know, Gainesville, college town, you know what I mean? College town band. You know, you figure when you start a band, for me at least, I never thought that we're planning for our future, you know. But, you know, it seemed with Less Than Jake, it grew slowly and, you know, and bit by bit by bit. And then here we are, it's 16 years later, and I kind of, you know, I'm still sort of astonished by it that it's lasted this long. And I appreciate it every day. And it's one of those things that, where you kind of sit back sometimes and you look at the history of what we've done. We've played, you know, from the smallest place, you know, to, you know, from like living rooms literally in Gainesville to the Reading Festival, which is, you know, like 90,000 people. And
right.
We've played everywhere in between. And with some of my favorite bands, we played with the Descendants and all, you know, because No Effects, you know, we've played with, you know, even bands as weird as, you know, Bon Jovi and things like that. And
right.
It's those opportunities that have happened and those experiences. I mean, I'm completely blown away by it. If you like sometimes I sort of sit down and someone brings something up to me, like, oh yeah, you guys did this, and I kind of trip out on it because it's been so long that you sort of forget things sometimes,
right,
you know,
right,
that you've done. And, you know, I don't know, I think that I'm completely blown away that it's still lasted this long, and I'm thankful, really, you know, every day that it's allowed me to do, you know, toys and put out records and have two, you know, record companies, not only, you know, the first one with Fueled by Ramen and now with Paper and Plastic, and it's allowed me to do, like you said earlier, a children's book, and it's allowed me to do a lot of things and travel the world, and I'm completely thankful for that, you know. And yeah, I think that as long as people, we said it before, and I think that it's the honest statement that we can make, as long as people show up for a Less Than Jake show, that's as long as we're going to stay a band. The minute we don't feel like, you know, relevant at all, is the moment that it's time to go.
Understand. Well, with that, Vinny, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. It was great to talk with you, and just I can't wait to see what you come up with next, that's for sure.
Right on, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks again to Vinny for coming on to the show. To learn more about his projects, go to lessthanjake.com and paperandplastic.com, plastic with a K on the end. Here is another Less Than Jake song, and this time it's a classic, taken from their Pezcore album, which was originally released in 1995. Here is Jen Doesn't Like Me Anymore.
Jen thinks it isn't fair that I don't really care if she likes me or not. And Jen doesn't like me at all, cause she made me feel like I wee rental chair. She thinks I'm all that I've got. No, Jen doesn't like me anymore. If she likes me or not.
And we're back here at Rocket Fuel. From their digital EP Pigeonholed, that was Lapona, who are from my current hometown of Tallahassee, Florida. That song was called Hawks and Doves. If you liked what you heard, download their entire Pigeonholed EP for free at pigeonholedep.tk. Prior to that was another band from the Paper and Plastic roster. From their digital EP The Gun Show Must Go On, that was We Are the Union with Rearranging Deck Chairs on the Titanic. Up next is the last song for this episode, and it comes from Mike Herrera's Tumbledown. Known for his work as the singer and bassist for the popular punk band MXPX, Mike Herrera is a voice easily recognizable by punk fans. Herrera takes that voice in a different direction with his new side project. Playing songs that are the perfect soundtrack to Saddlin' Up, Tumbledown is a fun record that is worth a listen. From Tumbledown, here is Homeward Bound.
That I dream about, where the sun shines all year round. The waving wheat through the fields and the home-cooked meals. You can sleep right on the ground. Homeward bound, I'm homeward bound. To my ears such a sweet, sweet sound. I had my head up in the clouds, my feet are on the ground. Oh Lord, I'm homeward bound. It's a long, hard road and it warms my soul to know that I'm almost there. As that day comes to a close, I'll have that grass between my toes and that wind blowing through my hair. Homeward bound, I'm homeward bound. To my ears such a sweet, sweet sound. I had my head up in the clouds, my feet are on the ground. Oh Lord, I'm homeward bound. Just can't lose, I'm gonna drink up all the booze, and then they'll have to carry me out. Homeward bound, I'm homeward bound. To my ears such a sweet, sweet sound. I had my head up in the clouds, my feet are on the ground. Oh Lord, I'm homeward bound.
That'll do it for this episode of Rocket Fuel. Send your thoughts, comments, and emails to me at rocketfuelpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to check out my MySpace page at myspace.com/rocketfuelpodcast. To get updates on the show and to read what I'm doing, follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/rocket_fuel. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.